Welcome. I'm Avery.
And I'm Grace Ann. And this is Drift, a podcast exploring stories and science of Barnegat Bay's past, present, and future.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to Drift, the podcast. I'm Avery.
It's Grace Ann.
And we are back again today with the second part of our Nemo Stormwater episode with Chris and Steve. We are so excited to welcome them back to the podcast and hear a little bit more of their wisdom about stormwater. This episode will be kind of the next step of the conversation that we started last week. So if you want a little bit more of a primer about stormwater buzzword definitions, stuff like that, to give yourself the baseline of understanding, you can refer back to our previous episode. But this week we are now stepping into the next piece of information that looks at what citizens can do specifically to engage themselves in the stormwater conversation and make an impact in their towns. And also kind of an insight as to how stormwater is being managed on the state and federal levels. So starting from that top-down level down to citizen engagement and action.
What can folks do to advocate for this on the local and town levels? Something as small as putting a barrel on their property or implementing a small-scale infrastructure project on their own yard, or perhaps showing up to a town meeting and calling for this action on the town level.
Now, I think all of those things, really, Avery. I think that, you know, it has to be a groundswell. And so that means that it has to start, you know, with individuals and then kind of works its way up the ladder. I've always tried to use localized flooding as sort of like a touch point for this because, you know, and Chris will tell you, I mean, I can talk about nutrients and pollutants and stuff like that, and people's eyes will roll back in their heads, you know. But you talk about flooding and everybody can relate to that. So even if it's just like a little bit of flooding that prevents me from getting to work or getting my kids to school or maybe get, you know, that makes it difficult for the EMTs to make a call or, you know, causes DPW staff to have to go out and clear out like a clogged drain. People react to that. And a lot of the projects that I've done, green infrastructure projects, really started that way. There was a problem. It was a flooding problem. But with that, it was a water quality problem too. But we tried to come in and try to address it first and foremost to, you know, to get that thing that was bothering people the most alleviated. And, you know, our infrastructure, you can go back, you can take a look at that NOAA report again. It'll tell you right now, the majority of the infrastructure in the country is at risk from more flooding because it's undersized or it's too old. And with climate change, it's not going to be able to accommodate all this additional runoff. So there's something that needs to be done. But anyhow, my point is that I try to use that whole concept of localized flooding as sort of like the touch point to get the conversation rolling and getting people interested in what, you know, in doing green infrastructure.
So we're often asked, you know, how do we prioritize where the stuff should go? And we often tell people it needs to go everywhere. You know, everywhere we can put it needs to go. And the way that happens is by creating local champions to advocate for this stuff. And we have we recognized it a long time ago. And you know, Steve and I do a lot of work in towns that have that local environmental commissioner or somebody from the planning board or the township committee who's a strong environmental advocate and want us to be there and want us to help them do these things. And in towns where we don't have those advocates, Rutgers created a program called Green Infrastructure Champions. So we're trying to train people to be those advocates, give them the knowledge they need to be able to go into their town, talk about this intelligently, and maybe get a rain garden built at the library, at Missile Building, or every school in New Jersey should have a rain garden at it, you know? So there's a lot of opportunities to kind of do that stuff. And I think there's also programs like Jersey Friendly Yards is out there, which is a great program for homeowners. They can log on and you know, redesign their yards and you know, put these kind of practices in their yards. So there's a lot of opportunities there, I think. And I think the strongest thing, though, is you do need local advocates to push for this stuff. And now you've got a great group, say Barnegat Bay, you know, in the Barnegat Bay area. So you already have these advocates who've been fanatics about this whole process, you know. And that's important. You need people standing on that soapbox screaming and yelling. And eventually people start listening. So I think that's a big piece of it. You know, Steve and I often think a lot about water quality as the big issue. But a lot of mayors we talk to really don't care about water quality. They care about flooding, you know. Yeah. And it's not really the big floods. It's, you know, like Steve said before, you get an inch and a half of rain. Roads are closed. You have to divert your way home from work. Instead of taking a half hour to get home, it takes an hour to get home. Or you got to cancel school, close school because the buses can't get around. You know, so it really ruins people's quality of life. So even just thinking about fixing those events is really crucial. You know, when we get 8-10 inches of rain in 6 hours, it's going to be hard to manage that kind of water in New Jersey. I mean, in those cases, you really just need to get the high ground and make sure you're safe. But when we get these smaller storms, we should be able to manage that effectively and not destroy our quality of life during those events. So,
yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and you know, just on my, you know, I have a small lot. I only have half acre lot, but I've got 5 rain gardens on my property. And, you know, one of them I built out of necessity, really, because I get a lot of runoff that comes into my yard from my neighbor's yard. And I said, I got to deal with this in a more, you know, creative way. And I'm in an area, I'm in Hunterdon County, very clay soils. So, you know, I did have to mend those soils a fair amount with a lot of organic material to get everything to work. But once, you know, and I think this is what you were bringing up, Avery, it's a little bit different from location to location. So, you know, the reason why I have so many rain gardens, because I do have clay soils. I know I can't hold too much water in any rain garden because it's going to, you know, won't work correctly. But, you know, I basically followed the guidance that's in the Rutgers rain garden manual. And, you know, constructed these rain gardens. And I think, you know, people come over to my house, they look at it, they just think it's a landscaped feature. They don't realize really that, you know, what it's been, what it does in terms of attenuating and minimizing, you know, flooding on my property.
How is stormwater managed right now at the state level in New Jersey? Kind of getting into the side of the technical things that we would be talking about around the table full of municipal leaders or...
Yeah, well I can start off with my rant if you want, Chris. I mean,
go ahead, Steve.
My position is that if you look at the stormwater rules, okay, they're still rate driven, meaning that the primary thing that a design engineer needs to do is to be able to establish that the peak flow post development for the 2, 10, and 100-year events have been sufficiently mitigated as per, you know, what's required by the rules. But that only those regulations are rate driven, meaning that I'm only dealing with flow rates. I'm not dealing with volume, I'm not dealing with pollutant removal. You know, the primary requirement is rate control. And as I mentioned before, unless you reduce volume, you're not going to be reducing flooding. And you're not going to be reducing the amount of pollutants that enter, you know, a receiving system, whether it's a wetland, a stream, a lake, or whatever. So, you know, that's sort of like the big hang up with New Jersey's regulation. Now, on the flip side of the coin, you know, with the recent promulgation 2 years ago of the mandate for green infrastructure to be used for as part of new development, yeah, that's going to help. It's going to help in the long run, but it doesn't do anything to mitigate all of the damage from earlier development. So, you know, that's my rant on that. But
yeah, so the regulations we have now, I mean, are designed to not let things get worse, right? So keep the status quo. And they do an okay job of that. Things still do get worse because there is more runoff volume in the end. And the problem with the regulations, they don't time that volume, you know. So if you're upstream of a town that frequently floods, if you release the water 4 hours after the storm, that town's still going to get that flood water. It's still going to affect them flooding. If you hold that water for 36 hours and then release it then, it'll be a lot better. So having that timed release is really important. And we don't really address that in our stormwater regulations. The other thing the regulations don't do is they don't require us to go back in and retrofit any of the existing development. Anything that was built before the 1980 has no stormwater management at all, which is most of the state. You know, so you begin thinking about, you know, what was built early on, and there's a huge amount of development that's not being managed. Now, other states, Connecticut, Vermont, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Delaware, they require all municipalities to go in as part of their permitting process for their storm sewer system to go in and retrofit a certain amount of existing development every year. So to go in and say, okay, we're going to have to put in, you know, so many, we have to manage so many acres of development that isn't currently being managed this year, and we're going to have to use our tax dollars to do that because we want to reduce flooding in our town and we want to improve water quality, and the state's requiring that of those guys to do that. We don't require that in New Jersey now. They're rewriting the regulations now. You know, some people are hoping they'll add that. As an employer of Rutgers, I can't advocate for regulations. I can just talk about the science behind it, but you know, there's some other states out there that have some really great stormwater permitting regulations that require the retrofitting of existing development with green infrastructure practices. And, you know, that would be something that would be great for New Jersey and would really help us with our flooding issues and our water quality issues, especially our lakes. Our lakes are filled with these harmful algal blooms. It's a nightmare now. And they're filled with sediment, and they will need to be dredged. And you know, there's a proposal, request for proposal out there now from the state giving $10 million for lake projects. I guarantee they're going to receive $100 million in applications. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done and not enough funding to be able to do it. Yeah. So we need to begin chipping away at it slowly over time. So.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and Chris makes a really good point about, you know, the nutrient component of stormwater runoff. That there's, you know, DEP does recommend that phosphorus and nitrogen load be reduced, but it's not a requirement. The requirement is simply on total suspended solids, which I'm not saying simply. I mean, that's still a big thing because, you know, some of these pollutants are adhered to sediment. So if you can remove sediment, you remove some of those pollutants. But there's no actual mandate that says you have to achieve, say, 60% or 70% phosphorus removal or 30% or 40% nitrogen removal. And we know that Barnegat Bay, you know, the majority of the eutrophication problems that you see in the bay is because of excess nitrogen loading. We know, as Chris pointed out, in the lakes throughout the state, because I've worked on probably all of the major lakes in the state, they're all, you know, all of their eutrophication problems and these harmful algae bloom problems, it's all a function of phosphorus. So, you know, having some teeth in the regulation that basically says, hey, as well as remove X amount of sediment, you also need to be removing a certain amount of phosphorus or a certain amount of nitrogen, that would really go a long ways to helping at least alleviate some of the future problems. But, you know, as Chris also pointed out, I think that's one of the big hangups I have with the regs the way they're written right now, is that there are exceptions that can be obtained, you know, for when it comes to like retrofitting. If I've got, you know, for instance, I'm going to put in a new box store in an area that already had an older box store, but I'm going to, like, say, expand it, but not increase the amount of impervious cover, probably can get away without having to do any stormwater management or minimal amount of stormwater management. And, you know, so those problems still come up. They're still out there. And like, as Chris mentioned, there's no requirement to go back and retrofit.
We definitely do a poor job of capture that redevelopment.
Yeah.
You know, people are redeveloping. There's opportunities to go in there and require them to do more stormwater management, especially places of redevelopment. A lot of those redevelopments that they're doing, there was nothing done in the first place.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's a great opportunity to kind of capture that. And it doesn't add a huge cost to the project. And I think that's part of the problem is people worried, oh, it's going to add some to the project. They're going to go redevelop someplace else. And that's just not true. You know,
right.
So I think if people are going to redevelop Toms River, they want to be in Toms River. That's why they're redeveloping. require to do a little bit more, they're going to do it because they want to be in top shirt, you know, right. And I think that's what's going to wind up happening. And I think we need to think a little bit more about that and not be so afraid that we're going to lose those ratables and they're going to go someplace else because, you know, right now New Jersey's headed to be built out. I think what's it scheduled for next Tuesday, Steve, built out for New Jersey? So we're going to be the first state in the nation that's going to be built out. A lot of redevelopment going on throughout the entire state, so we have to find ways to make sure that we get them to do a better job managing stormwater. So
folks who might have been involved in our mission or have seen us out at a fair or a festival or something might have heard us talking about something called MS4, which is a tool or suite of policy around managing stormwater from the state kind of top-down level. To speak to what the heck MS4 is and perhaps how this fits in the stormwater conversation?
I'm going to let Chris run with that one. He can have all of that.
So MS4 was a neat, acronym that EPA came up with. They were trying to be cute. The M stands for municipal. And the four S's stand for separate storm sewer system. Okay, so that's what it stands for. So what it was a way to give every town in New Jersey a permit for their storm sewer system. Now that system could be the catch basins and the roads and the pipes connecting those and the detention basins that they're connected to. It could also be the drainage ditches in the rural communities. So anything that's moving stormwater around is being regulated through this system. And as part of those regulations, the state requires the town to do street sweeping now. So you got to do more street sweeping. You've got to clean out those catch basins. You got to make sure that people are picking up their leaves and the leaves aren't going into the catch basins. You know, you have to pass all kinds of ordinance, pick up after your pets. You can't feed the wildlife. You can't dump your motor oil into the catch basin. So there's all these things had to be done. And this was New Jersey's attempt to try to figure out how can we do a better job of kind of addressing existing development. So it's kind of maintenance program of our existing system. That's going to be how we're going to improve water quality. And it works to a certain extent. Like I said, because of those regulations came out in 2004 and the new stormwater regulations came out in 2004, you know, we haven't seen our waterways, more waterways getting impaired in New Jersey. We're still at 95%. So things haven't gotten worse. So those rules are kind of working. The also part of that rule is there's an educational component with that. And there's a whole table in the back of rules. And you have to, you know, there's five different tables. You have to get points from each table. It's very, very bureaucratically created, you know, and so for example, if you put up a sign at a rain garden, you get a half a point for that. If you go give a talk at a high school to kids about stormwater management, you get a point for that. So every town has to get 12 points every year. A lot of towns reach out to groups like Save Barnegat Bay and say, hey, listen, could you do this for us? You know, we'll give you a little bit of money, a little bit of funding to print stuff out and go to some of these meetings, you know, because really, quite frankly, the towns are not very good about education, you know, and when you get educators out there, like people from Barnegat Bay or Rutgers or other nonprofits, you know, they do a really good job of taking the terminology and putting it in terms that people understand. You know, we're talking to probably the biggest word we use today was watershed, I think, you know, and if I went to my, you know, 84-year-old mother, I started talking to her about watershed, she'd have no idea what I'm talking about, you know, so trying to put terms, people in terms that they get, you know, and I think that's part of this too, and relating to what they're dealing with, you know. So I think that's what the MS4 regulations are about, and you're going to see a lot more. They're trying to renew those now. They're trying to add components to those. They want people to start doing, towns start doing plans about how they could better manage stormwater, which would be a wonderful thing. Rutgers has done a lot of plans for towns on where their impervious cover is and how to better manage that with green infrastructure. So impervious cover is a term we use a lot of, and they use a lot of that in the MS4 regulations. Impervious cover is any surface that water can't pass through. So it's the roof of your house, it's the roads, the sidewalks, the parking lot. it should be the roof of my environmental science building here, but it leaks like a sieve, so that really doesn't count. But so for the most part, it's those hard surfaces. You know, also some impervious surface, you might consider some of the retirement communities in Ocean County where they've compacted the soil so much and put a layer of sod on top, and the water really can't get into the ground. And although it has turf grass on, they irrigate it on a daily basis, it really could be considered an impervious surface because water doesn't get into the ground. So we're trying to mitigate those situations too. So I don't know, Steve, was that good?
You hit it all. I mean, and definitely MS4 should be like a tool that towns can use address some of either the flooding problems, the water quality problems, the quality of life problems that come about because of improper stormwater management. However, you mentioned this, Chris, that I think a lot of towns see this as a some kind of hurdle that they have to clear, and they'll look at the simplest way to clear that hurdle, get the points they need, and sort of like move on, but not really. They're not really doing their community justice when they do that by just, doing the minimum. And so MS4, I don't think it's power, let's call it, if you want to call it the what you can get out of it. I don't think that has really been used to the full extent that the towns can be using it to. And I think, again, some of it maybe because the way it's been politicized, as opposed to looking at it as a means by which we can make our cities, our towns, both safer and something that's more enjoyable, for the folks that live in that town.
Well, I think a big part of it too is that a lot of towns didn't realize, that they had a budget for this stuff. I mean, this. When you have to start cleaning out all your catch basins and doing all that street sweeping, that adds to your budget. And, what we find a lot is that, when a town's looking to cut their budget a little bit, well, who does the first guys that laid it off are the public works guys?
Right.
In this case, you should be hiring more public works guys to do this kind of work. The next step would be kind of thinking about a stormwater utility.
Yeah.
In which case, you charge people in town based on their impervious footprint a certain fee every year, and that money goes to dealing with the MS4 system, the stormwater system, and building good practices and maintaining old ones. People think of it as like a – people try to think of it as a tax, but it's really a fee, in which case you can avoid a fee. You can't avoid a tax, but you can avoid a fee. The stormwater utility is designed that, if you have a home – maybe an individual homeowner would pay between $35 to $100 a year for this fee. But if that homeowner put in a rain garden or a rain barrel, the fee would be reduced. Yep. So, so that's one way to kind of get around it and get people to put their own funding into addressing some of these issues to avoid those fees. So I think that's another way to think about it. But right. I think one of the problems is it's just not – towns just aren't funding this the way they need to for it to really be effective. And I can't blame them. I know it's a lot of towns, so they don't have the money, but this is an important issue. So
right, no. Yeah, and I think that's a really. I'm glad you brought up the stormwater utility thing because again, if you want to talk about something that's been politicized in a negative way, that's definitely applies to stormwater utilities in New Jersey. But as you mentioned, there's tons of examples nationwide where stormwater utilities have been in place in some cases for over a decade or maybe two decades. And, the fee levied on individual property owners is not that significant, $60 a year. And that money is then going to resolve some of these flooding and water quality impacts that actually, have a negative detriment on quality of life, on property values, et cetera. So, it's another way we have to just kind of like turn our thinking inside out and, sort of embrace this because as we sort of mentioned that from the beginning, stormwater is a resource. It's something that we should be thinking of in a positive way, not in a negative way. But to do so, we need more education, more outreach, things that, Save Barnegat Bay is doing And I think we need more of a uniform voice with respect to stormwater is something that can be managed and managed in a proactive, positive manner, as opposed to just considering it as a waste that I'm going to push down to my neighbor.
Yeah,
I think it's critical that we look at the issue or the resource of stormwater actually being at the forefront of public safety and municipal operations, you know, like you mentioned that sometimes we see shortcomings in how individual towns who are charged with implementing these initiatives or these management plans falling short because of budget concerns, understaffing, or just kind of lack of awareness of how critical this management is in the first place. When we see stormwater as a resource that we are all connected to for public safety and town operations, that's when we can really transform our prioritization of it. You know, it should really be at the forefront of conversation of how we manage our towns. If you're how you go up to your public meetings and advocate for things happening in your backyard.
A resident or homeowner or a person who lives in a town is going to their local planning board, zoning board, council, environmental commission, a green team, what have you, meeting, and they're trying to figure out how they can advocate for really, you know, grand idea of stormwater. So what are some things, you know, advocating for less development, you know, so give us some bullet points.
Well, I think we go back, we start with advocating for reduction in the amount of nuisance flooding events and an improvement in, you know, the quality of life. I mean, where I've seen this really work well is with lake communities because, you know, people live around a lake, they want to ride on that lake and they get it. What, you know, what goes into that lake affects its water quality, and that affects their ability to recreate on that water body. So they, I have found not all lake communities, but the majority of lake communities do tend to be more proactive in terms of thinking about stormwater management and a little bit more receptive to some of these, hey, these are things we can do on our own property to alleviate some of these problems. So I don't know. That's where I would start off, you know, always with that. Hey, what can we do to address this localized flooding? So if I was going to, you know, a planning board meeting or EC meeting, whatever, I'd want to be asking those questions. What's being done, you know, by the town to meet, you know, to comply with MS4? If, you know, I knew enough about MS4 to, you know, ask those types of questions, or even simple, hey, you know, I've got a stream that runs through my backyard. What are you guys doing to prevent it from flooding my property out or improving the water quality of it or, you know, a lake or a pond or whatever? So I think that's the way to initiate the discussion.
Well, I think a lot of towns also have these tree ordinances, Steve, the, you know, the shade tree. They wind up, you know, people cut down trees and they get money to the shade tree commission. They're supposed to plant more trees, and I see a lot of towns collecting a lot of money from developers and not really spending too much of it on these trees. And you know, I begin thinking that, well, maybe we can start advocating for spending some of that money on some of this green infrastructure instead of just putting trees. I mean, trees are great. They're great means of intercepting rainfall. Trees don't really provide a lot of storage like a green infrastructure practice would, where we actually would hold a volume of water, you know. So I think that's really important to really kind of think about that a little bit.
That's an excellent idea.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for getting on this podcast and spending your valuable time with us in this educational effort podcast. We appreciate your time and your expertise, and we know that you're doing a lot of important work. And so your time is even more valued for those reasons. So thank you guys so much, Chris Abrupta and Steve Souza, for being here with us.
Yeah, you're very much welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. This is great.
We want to say a big thank you to Chris and Steve for spending their time with us here in this podcast and allowing us, you know, an in to their expertise and their time. And it's extra valuable because these guys have so many huge projects going on throughout the whole state of New Jersey, and they're you know, doing a lot of work here in Barnegat Bay with us to move positive, good management practices forward for stormwater. So if you are curious that after listening to hours of this podcast last week, this week, and you're like, all right, well, really, like, what are the nuts and bolts? Like, what can I do as a resident? Here are the things in a succinct and straightforward list as we can possibly give you. So the first thing you can do is install a rain barrel. We run free workshops here at Save Barnegat Bay and throughout the watershed, but you can also purchase rain barrels in stores. You can install a rain garden. And if that sounds like a really big task, it is a really big task, but it will save you time and money in the future. There's a fantastic app on your phone that you can download, and you can access it also on your computer browser. It's hosted by the University of Connecticut. It's actually just called Rain Garden, and it has a really fantastic set of tutorial videos, resources, links, even a place that you can, you know, it even has a place you can plug in measurements from your yard. And I would highly recommend starting there as a place to begin in installing a rain garden on your property. If you're not ready for a rain garden, you can certainly put a simple native plant garden in that doesn't have any excavated soil and really just is a flat garden full of native plants. That's a really great alternative to a rain garden. You can, if none of those things are options, you can simply disconnect your downspout. Allow the downspout to drain onto a pervious surface so that water drains into more vegetation or soil as opposed to your driveway or your sidewalk. You can pick up trash. That is a very simple thing you can do to prevent pollution and runoff from carrying pollution into our waterways. It seems like a really simple thing, but it definitely eliminates how much of that stuff ends up in the water. And then if you do have a lawn, you can reduce how much stuff you put on it. Fertilizers and pesticides can dissolve in water and become toxic as they accumulate in the system. Picking up dog waste seems like a very simple thing, but because there's 9 million people in New Jersey and over 600,000 of us in Ocean County, if even half of those people have dogs and even a quarter of those people don't pick it up, it can definitely be a detriment to the amount of bacteria and excess nutrients are ending up in our waterways. And of course, if you have no interest in the rest of those things, you can still use your voice, which your voice is extremely powerful. You can attend local meetings and be a part of conversations that are happening at your community level, at your, you know, homeowners association, the municipal level. You can even go as far as having conversations with local nonprofits. Being a part of the solution just means that you are a part of the conversation, and that can look like a lot of different things. And finally, if any of this was inspiring to you or you found any of it useful or helpful, we encourage you to reach out to your friends, family, community members, neighbors, and share one thing that you learned. I always finish my education programs with asking folks to share one thing, because all of the difference we're going to make is going to be all of us together. It's not one person, one organization, or one government official. Not one of any of those things is going to be the solution. It's going to be all of us all together working on it. And that requires all of us to be on the same page. So sharing one thing that you learned just helps spread the education and allows us all to be a part of the solution. Thank you so much for tuning in again. We hope that that was useful to you and that you're excited to get involved, and that we will see you at our future workshops throughout the watershed, and that you tell us that you heard this podcast.
So as a reminder, coming up, we have a couple more Stormwater Series installments as a part of this program. So Chris and Steve, if you couldn't get enough of them, we'll be back at those. It'll be happening June 21st. That is a virtual Zoom seminar. Information about how to register for that will be popping up on our social media, on our email listservs, or as always, you can get in touch with me, assistant@savebarnegatbay.org. And then the final installment of that series will happen in person at Mill Creek Pavilion in Stafford Township on July 21st. And that will include kind of a field component as well as a traditional seminar talk about the subject matter. So all folks are invited. We are especially interested in hosting anyone who falls under the umbrella of public works, water operators, storm sewer operators, elected officials, municipal officials, green teams, planning boards, anyone under that kind of realm. So stay in touch. We hope that this was an interesting subject matter for you all and made you feel perhaps that you have a little bit more of a stake in stormwater issues than you thought. So until next time, everyone, thanks so much for listening.
See you next time.